Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, it's such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
You fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 45% off select styles and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 45% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hot stove baseball deal still happening. Pete Alonso still out there. The Yankees, we still don't know who's playing third base. To make it make sense and talk a little more hot stove, we bring in Laura Albanese, baseball writer for Newsday. Hey, Laura, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Doing just fine, thanks. I just saw, it looks like a little while ago, that the Tigers signed Jack Flaherty, which is an interesting deal. 2 years. It says $35 million, but the second year, when you look at the opt-out and incentives, if he makes 15 starts, really turns into like 2 years, $45 million, whatever. Still, interesting deal there when you consider some of the other high-priced deals that were out there. Are you surprised at this Flaherty news that a pitcher who had as good a season in general has pitched as well as he has to get this kind of deal?
Not necessarily. I think we were starting to see the trend kind of a few years back. We saw what happened with Blake Snell last year. Even Jordan Montgomery, coming off a great year, kind of had to like essentially have a smaller contract. And we're seeing the trend towards these smaller kind of like show me contracts that eventually become, you know, bigger contracts after they opt out or after the 2 years are over. And frankly, it's mimicking a lot of what we're seeing with Pete Alonso, where, you know, this is a guy who, you know, Billy Epler had offered him, what was it, a 5-year extension?
Yeah, $156 million. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. 150. And now we're looking at possibly, what, a 2 or 3 year deal with opt out. So certainly it looks like general managers, presidents of baseball operations are tending towards these less player friendly deals, mostly because they're seeing that, you know, there's a lot of variability out there, and there's a lot of things that can be different. We saw it with the Dodgers. I mean, they barely had a starting rotation going into the playoffs. They did it with a bullpen. So there's a lot of different ways to build a team, and it does not necessarily mean mega contracts.
Yeah, some of the pitching deals were for, you know, I don't know, some were for, you know, higher dollars or longer deals on people who were less than Flaherty. But I think some of the point that you're making comparing Flaherty to, let's say, to Pete is the position as a free agent and an agent that you don't want to be in, if this is all a game of musical chairs and there's only so many teams that have money and needs, you don't want to be that player that, as we get, you know, it's February, we're almost at pitchers and catchers reporting.
Right.
You know, as we get closer to the start of spring training, you don't want to be the last player standing, the odd man out. And I think if we go back, you know, a number of years, Scott Boras used to use that patient strategy with, let's say, a Bryce Harper and others, and there would be that one owner who would emerge for the big deal. And look, if you have a Juan Soto, it doesn't matter. I feel like you or I, you know, I probably could have. You have a player like that that everybody wants. It's easier to negotiate. For a Pete Alonso, have Scott Boras and Pete misjudged this market to the tune where now all the first base jobs are done? Is he almost stuck coming back to the New York Mets?
I don't know if he's necessarily stuck. I think there's always going to be a market for someone who hits 35 to 40 home runs a year. That being said, I mean, I do feel he is essentially in a bad position because there was a flurry of first baseman signings about a month ago. And people just kind of like filled that need. And so, you know, when it comes to Pete Alonso, does he provide value? Yes, absolutely. But he provides the most value to the New York Mets, not just because of his production, but because of that kind of persona that he has as the homegrown talent, as someone who Mets fans really, really, really appreciate. That's not going to have the same cachet in Seattle. That's not going to have the same cachet in Toronto. So it's possible that having seen all of that, and the fact that, again, he's in his age 30 season as a first baseman, and that's generally considered the beginning of the decline for someone who plays that position, who is a power hitter, he's in a tough spot. And frankly, I don't know if he misjudged it. It's possible that he was kind of just fed something from Scott Boras or fed something from the people around him that made him feel like he would be able to get more. And frankly, a few years ago, he would have. People just are not considering contracts the way they used to.
What I think you were at the Amazing Day, if I saw from Twitter and some of that, it looked like you were one of the reporters who were there and covering that. But in what you heard, what did you take away from Mets owner Steve Cohen? And is his approach to talking to the fans about a free agent or, you know, Pete Alonso and the free agent contract and all of this negotiations and things like that, how different is that from what you're used to in covering other teams and owners?
Vastly different. I think my jaw kind of hit the ground when he was basically like, because prior to Steve Cohen saying what he did about the negotiations, David Stearns essentially said the same thing. He's like, you know, we might have to pivot and look internally for first base options. And he got booed. Mm-hmm. He got universally booed by everybody in that crowd because it was a fan event at Amazing Day. And Steve Cohen goes, okay, I am going to not only double down on what David Stern says, but I'm going to give you details. I'm going to say that I don't like how the contract is structured. And it was an interesting play by him by saying how the contract is structured as opposed to the money. And he got cheered. The fans were like, okay, yeah, now I get it. Because it made it seem like, no, we're not being cheap. I am Steve Cohen. I am the richest individual owner in baseball. I'm not trying to like skimp out on anything, but I feel like I'm taken for a ride. And that is what he said. Suddenly the fans are on his side, and lo and behold, the next day, the Mets and Pete Alonso and Scott Boras are back in talks. So it was very interesting. I thought it was a kind of a masterful business tactic by him because, frankly, if he had no interest in bringing Pete Alonso back, I don't think he would have bothered saying, hey, very publicly, hey, I don't like the structure of this contract.
If you had to predict, when do you think this Alonso thing will get settled, and will it be that Pete maybe overrides Scott Boras and says, you know, I don't want to go anywhere else. Just make it with the Mets.
I mean, I honestly don't know. I don't know the situation well enough. And it might not even be overriding Scott Boras. It might be a situation where Scott Boras is like, hey, let me not alienate, Juan Soto's boss for now. Let me not alienate a guy who in the future I'm going to have to make various business dealings with. This could become a mutual situation between Scott Boras and Steve Cohen and Pete Alonso, where it's like, okay, what is best for all of our interests? Unfortunately for Pete, that might not mean the biggest bang for his buck right now. But I think, you know, the way that this has progressed, he might have come to terms with that by now.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm sure you've seen the rumors that the San Diego Padres might be trading a pitcher, whether that is Dylan Cease, Michael King. And there are rumors the Mets are interested. How well do you think the Mets match up with some, you know, how realistic do you think making a potential deal like that at this point with where the Mets are heading into the season?
I mean, I do think they need rotation help. It's just too much of a question mark. They have mentioned in the past that they would like to go to a six-man rotation simply because that protects Kodai Senga, who, you know, when he was pitching overseas, only pitched once a week as opposed to the every five-day thing, and he's coming off like a massive injury where he barely pitched last season. So while Sean Manaea had a great season, he is an above-average pitcher. I do not necessarily think that he's the ace-type pitcher, and Senga is a question mark. So what does that all mean? That means that you're going to heavily rely on someone like Blackburn or Tyler McGill. I think trading for someone like a Dylan Cease or Michael King would be very beneficial and borderline necessary for the Mets if they want to compete with the likes of the Yankees and the Dodgers. That being said, you know, like the entire point of what the Mets have been doing and what we've seen in like from the last trade deadline, it's not that they're necessarily prospect huggers, but they want to build a culture of sustainability. And that means properly valuing your prospects so that you can kind of reload year after year, because you can only do what they're doing, which is going that far over the luxury tax threshold for so long, without having that kind of sense of stability underneath it. So it's dependent on what the Padres are asking. They kind of got all these pieces back when they traded Juan Soto. Mm-hmm. So I'm assuming that they're going to want a good chunk of prospects for someone like a Dylan Cease or a Michael King.
Yeah, I'm sure. And, then the Mets have to decide, you know, which of their prospects are off limits. Let's turn to the Yankees. And on paper, do you think the Yankees are better or worse than last year's team?
I think, you know, it's an interesting question. I think they might be a little bit better just in terms of maturity. Losing Juan Soto is always going to be a huge blow. Obviously, but having a healthy Gerrit Cole, I think Max Fried is a fantastic addition. I like what they've been able to do with the bullpen. I think they could be better. A lot of it, weirdly enough, is dependent on what type of Paul Goldschmidt are we going to get? Mm-hmm. Because that first base position was kind of a black hole with Anthony Rizzo's injury, and then with what we had with DJ LeMahieu. So that's the question. And once again, they need another corner infielder, which just feels like the same thing that I've been repeating over and over again for the last few years. They need that corner infield help. It's going to be interesting. I want to see what happens with Austin Wells and his continued maturation. I do feel that that's going to be really great. I want to see Anthony Volpe take the next step. If you can have these young players step up, this could be a great team.
Yeah, and I think the American League, to me, seems down versus the National League, which has such top-heavy depth of, I mean, obviously there's the Dodgers and maybe everybody else, but still, Mets and Braves and Phillies and Padres, a lot of good teams. Not as much of that in the American League. Yankees feel like still the class of the American League. But even with that said, how do the Yankees sell, you know, if you're the New York Yankees and you're still the most valuable franchise in baseball, valued over $7 billion, $7.5 billion. How are you selling to your fan base that plan A for third base right now is DJ LeMahieu, who seems constantly injured and is what, like, I think 36 years old, Oswaldo Cabrera, and Oswald Peraza? That's what Aaron Boone is telling us. That's plan A. Are you buying that?
I mean, not necessarily. I think maybe Brian Cashman has a few more tricks up his sleeve, kind of looking at the market a little bit more. But I mean, like, DJ LeMahieu is an interesting kind of prospect, because how much of his quote unquote decline has been because of the injuries, and does a healthy DJ LeMahieu, who, you know, I mean, he, back when he was healthy, he did hit. He hit for average. He had a career season. That was only a few years ago. Can he become that again? I don't necessarily think so, but I'm also not in kind of like the belief that it's an absolute impossibility. That being said, I feel like Brian Cashman still has it. He still has the ability to make interesting moves. You know, a lot of people are like, well, you know, what's the definition of insanity? Keep doing the same thing over and over again. And that's what the Yankees have been accused of. But I think, you know, what we saw, the way the Yankees pivoted after they lost out on Juan Soto, really showed what Brian Cashman is capable of. And I don't think he's done yet.
I hope so for Yankees' sake, because DJ LeMahieu turns 37 in July.
Right, yeah.
Played, I think, 60-plus games this past year, hit about 200. So I'm not buying that he can stay healthy at this point, that it somehow is going to get better at age 37. Laura Albanese covers MLB, covers Mets and Yankees for Newsday. Appreciate the time. We'll catch up with you soon.
Thanks so much.